part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for agreeing to do this. Thank you for coming on to Part-Time Fanboy. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Well, for anyone listening, my name is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast, and I have on the line with me writer, creator, Terry Mayo. I pronounced that correctly, right?
Yeah, that's how you pronounce it, yes. Terry Mayo.
I did not. Well, I saw on your Facebook page, you've got like, this is how you pronounce it, which is really funny. And then I have a long history of mangling creators' names on this podcast. So I was very happy to have a somewhat simpler name to pronounce. But
Yeah. No, you'd be surprised. A lot of people come up and they're like, Mr. Mayo.
Oh, like, really? Oh,
so that's why I put it on there. I figured it was simple, but...
That's funny. So you, to me, are the creator of... well, it's funny because I always want to... Well, I'm going to say the actual name of the book, The Wicked Righteous, but I always call it in my head The Wicked and the Righteous. Like it's some, like old soap opera or something with like music playing in the background. But it is The Wicked Righteous, and it is a miniseries, correct?
Correct, yeah. It's a six-issue limited series, and then actually just signed on last week to do books 7 through 12.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. So you sort of had set it up as like a miniseries and then possible ongoing? Is that how you had it planned in your head?
Yeah, I mean, I think most writers, if they're telling the truth, will tell you that they leave things open-ended just in case.
Sure.
But so that's kind of what I did was gave the sixth issue a nice place to end, but was had enough intrigue to carry over to another arc if need be, and the response has been good enough that Alterna was and it was nice enough to allow me to do six more of them.
Oh, great. So this won't be like, you know, like how Marvel used to do it like in the 80s where it was like they would do a miniseries and then they would do another miniseries and then maybe an ongoing or something like this. This will continue like at issue 7 and then go on, or will it be like a whole other miniseries, like numbering wise? I guess that's like a really nerdy inside baseball question, but yeah.
Yeah, no problem. And you know, and I know there's been talk at Alterna about what they're going to do. And they may even have like variants that like the newsstand might be one, like starting over 1 through 6, but then the ones that you get in the comic shop are 7 through 12, or I might have that backwards. But I'm not sure if that's something that's actually going to happen or if something that it was just in the talks. But it picks up right after number 6. So, I mean, it wouldn't be – it's not like it's a whole new story, whole new people. It's the same characters that are going to make it out of 6 that are going to be going into 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Sure. Oh, wow. That's great. That's good news because I actually picked up the first 4 issues from you at WonderCon. And I remember I kind of was like coming around a corner and I saw your table and I was like, Alterna, you know, because I actually interviewed Peter Cimetti on a previous podcast. And I think that's how, like, I sort of connected with you because you sort of friended me on Facebook. And usually, like, people I have not interviewed or meet in person, like, my personal Facebook page, I'm like, I don't know. But for some reason, I remember seeing the artwork for the covers and being like, oh, wait, that's Alterna Press. And those covers look awesome, so I'm going to accept this guy's friend request. So
I'm glad you did. And I was looking back. I guess it's a small world because you had Neil Gibson's Twisted Dark on there, and I have a book coming out through T-Pub, which is Neil Gibson. So I guess that's just small circle of people that we swim with.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, it's funny because like the comics community seems to be smaller than you would think it was. You know, people connect through other people. It's like 6 degrees of like Stan Lee or instead of Kevin Bacon, you know, so which your T-Pub book, is that the Stan Lee book that they've been hyping up or like connected with Stan Lee or is it something completely different?
Mine's going to be completely different. Oh, okay. Stan Lee's is the one that they are putting out. I want to say first. So I think Stan Lee's comes out first. And then Michael Gordon has one that's coming out called Transdimensional, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And then mine comes out in through T-Pub in August. It hits, I believe at the last week in August is when my the Disposable Legends comes out through T-Pub.
Uh-huh.
And that'll be another 6-issue mini that's released monthly and then a collected trade.
Oh, okay. So is the T-Pub... Are like those three titles like interconnected somehow, or do they like, or are they individual stories, or different from one another, or?
They're all different. They're all separate. They're because T-Pub. I don't know how much Neil got into it in the conversation you guys might have had, or how much you know about them. But they were traditionally doing graphic novels and trades in the UK.
Yeah.
And then this year they're making a push to do single issues in comic book shops.
Oh. Okay.
So they're all the single issues that they're doing are going to be distributed by Diamond, available in any comic book shop. And these first three titles, the Stan Lee's Lucky Man, Transdimensional, and then my book, Disposable Legends, are the first three pushes to single issues and to a wider American audience.
Oh, wow.
Because they're pretty big over in the UK. I mean, I've been lucky enough to table with them at a couple places, Chicago and Seattle, this year. And just the response from people has been amazing on the trades that they have. So it was just, I figure, a matter of time, because in the UK there's been times that they beat out The Walking Dead as far as like sales and popularity.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So they're a pretty big deal over there. So I'm really excited to see what the response is going to be over here.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting, because in my conversation with him, you know, he was saying that comics were not like such a big deal over in the UK, or that people saw them more as for children. And it's just really interesting to hear that that company is making like really big waves over there overseas.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to think that at least from what I've read and what I've been told and what then, you know, the numbers I've seen, there's the 2000 AD, T-Pub, and I want to say Titan, that are pretty much the three big companies over there.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, you know, Titan and 2000 AD, they kind of are in a land of their own as far as being big, but you know, any headway you can make in the comic industry is nice.
Sure, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Wicked Righteous. I always want to default to the Wicked and the Righteous. I almost like slipped there.
Like the Bold and the Beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. You know, cue cheesy music in the background. But this is not a cheesy book, and I was actually really pleasantly surprised by it when I picked it up at WonderCon, because first of all, anyone who doesn't know, Alterna Press does this thing where they come out with like newsprint issues, and they range to about like $1 to $1.50 each. And when I came up to your table, A, it was something that I was interested in because you had friended me on Facebook and I had seen the covers and I was like, oh, wow, those covers are really interesting and compelling. Like that kind of sucked me in. I liked the logo too. And then you were like, oh, which ones do you want? And I was like, I want the whole thing. It's $1.50 each. So why don't you tell people what The Wicked Righteous is and what it's about? Because for me, it was... like kind of a mix between sort of like Apocalypse meets, I'm only up to the fourth issue, so Apocalypse meets kind of like a John Hughes sort of, which is probably way off from than what's in your head, but I've gotten to sort of the romantic part of it, so that's why like I'm feeling like a John Hughes vibe, but what you want to present may be something completely different, so you can compare it to John Hughes.
No. I mean, that's in my head and in my heart. That's kind of how I feel, is that it is kind of like a coming of age morality tale, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, with a backdrop of like the apocalypse and the dystopian landscape. There's been reviews that have called it like Walking Dead without the zombies, or Stranger Things meets Mad Max, to kind of give you, I guess, an idea of what it, the flair of it is. But yeah, but it's like a post-apocalyptic Lord of the Flies. Something's happened, and the majority of the adults in the world have died. And so you, but the children have been left alive, and the wicked adults in the world are still alive. So you have these children trying to make it through this dystopian landscape that full of murderous adults, basically.
Wow. That, I mean, yeah, it's a really great concept. I mean, I very much liked it when I picked up the first issue, and I was like, of course, I think I'd read a synopsis on your Facebook page too, but it's interesting because it sort of deals with like a family that are it's a family, and their family has, at least in the opening of the first book, it's like a group of brothers, and their parents are passing away, or I don't know if I can't remember if the mother has passed away, but I know that they're dealing with their father who's about to pass away, and mm-hmm. he's sort of like telling them like to go on and live their life the best they can without them, and try and survive. And it's really kind of dark, but it also has that sort of familial bond in there that kind of like holds these characters together. And there's also sort of a religious aspect to it too, right? I mean, not heavy-handed, but I mean, they are sort of a religious family, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely religious and biblical tones to the book. I mean, it's not a Bible thumping book by any means. I mean, but it's but there are some undertones to it. And, you know, I mean, I grew up in a pretty religious family, and I've always felt like some of the greatest stories ever told came out of the Bible. So it's nice to be able to borrow some of the backdrop of that book and kind of, you know, blend it in with the story I'm trying to tell.
Gotcha. Do you have a big, large family of brothers, like the characters in the book, or?
I actually have, I have seven sisters.
Wow.
Yes. Really? And I'm the youngest. I'm the only boy. So, and I'm the youngest of all of them, but I have a gaggle of kids. When I started writing the book, I had four boys.
Wow, really?
Just like in the book, they're four boys. So, you know, it's loosely, I guess, based on, you know, how I picture in my head my boys would act in this kind of world. So it's kind of got a personal vibe going for it as far as, you know, my love letter to my kids. And when I'm writing it, I'm thinking about, you know, what would my kids do in this situation? What I hope that they would make the right decisions. And those first couple pages in the first issue where the dad is talking to the boys, I mean, that's, you know, that was coming from my heart as far as what I feel like I would want to tell my kids if they were in the same situation.
Sure, sure. Oh, wow. That's amazing. You have four boys. How do you have time to even write this book?
Well, like I said, when I started, I had four boys. Now I have six and one more on the way.
Oh,
so.
My God.
Yeah.
And you've got a second book coming out? Holy cow.
Yeah, I've got a second book through TPUB coming out called Disposable Legends, and then there's going to be short stories for The Wicked Righteous that are in the Alterna. It came out on a Wednesday, the little anthology that they have coming out every other month. Uh-huh. So there's going to be like a little tie for between the first arc and second arc, like little two-page stories to kind of tie things together.
Gotcha.
So that way when we release the trade, we can kind of just combine it all and make it one big universe, I guess.
Oh, okay. So you're going to wait for the trade to come out till this after the second arc, or am I misunderstanding that?
No, maybe I'm just saying it wrong. Book number six comes out in June.
Yeah.
And then we'll do the trade in the winter sometime. I think it's September, October. Mm-hmm. And then we'll pick up with the second arc in early 2019.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, okay. So you're going to wait like sort of like half a year until the second arc.
Right. Give the trade a little bit of time to kind of, you know, find an audience and stand on its own for a little bit. And then we'll go to the second arc.
Wow. Well, that's what I'm still recovering from the six kids. Like, that's amazing. The fact that you're able to even, like, form a coherent thought with, like, I have one and I'm like, oh my God. So how is this your first comics project? I mean, I think this is the, you know, not to offend or anything, but this is kind of the first time I've ever heard your name. Is this the first time you've written a comic, or is this?
No. I mean, I, like I said, well, you kind of nailed it on the head with all the kids, that I didn't have a whole lot of time before. So most of the projects I worked on were like web comics or self-published, and they were based solely here in San Diego and didn't really have much of an audience. But it was kind of more my, I guess if you wanted to compare it to like your education in comics, it would be like my junior college years of of trying to break in and learn the right and the wrong things to do as far as writing and collaborating and pitching and everything, and get all the mistakes out of the way. That way, once I'm ready to like try to push for something bigger, I would be ready, I guess.
Oh, got you. So you started off like with web comics and stuff like that, or like zines?
Right.
Or
right. Little web comics. Yeah, they were anywhere from 2 pages to 8 pages and a bunch of short stories. Because when I moved out to California in the 90s, I did some screenwriting when I lived up in L.A. and sold a couple, but nothing ever was produced. Nothing was ever made. Mm. So fast forward about 20 years, and I was, after my two oldest kids left home, one went to the military and one is in Santa Cruz at college right now.
Wait a minute. You are doing video. Well, I've met you in person too. You do not look old enough to have a kid that's in the military. Or
yeah,
like,
yeah.
What is this fountain of youth that you're like? What religious deity did you make a deal with? Because like, there's no way that you are old enough to have, like, that's crazy. Like,
yeah,
that's amazing.
My oldest turns 24 this year. Yeah.
What? Get out. How old are you? Do you mind my asking?
I'm in my 40s. I just, you know, started young when I'm from Texas, so there's not a whole lot to do in my
life. Oh, jeez.
Except to graduate high school and start a family. So that's what I did.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. Wow. Well, you've done well for yourself, I think. Like, that's great. No, but where can you find can you find any of these like little web comics that you experimented with? Do you keep them up, or do you have them anywhere?
I used to have them on my website, gravelydisabledinc.com, but I took them down cuz I was embarrassed. And I thought about putting them back up and like,
you know,
like maybe reworking them or doing like a, you know how George Lucas kind of tweaked his stuff, maybe. but then part of me is like, no, I'll just keep them, and it's a learning stuff, and maybe people who are breaking in can see it and be like, oh, okay. But then I'm like, well, why would they care what I started with? I'm, like you just said, you never heard of me. So.
No, but I mean, people are hearing of you. I mean, it's really good to look at, like, you know, you look at something like The Wicked Righteous, and it's you know, it's a good quality product. I mean, you know, between you, me, and the listeners, I mean, I did... This is one of my favorite Alterna comics, you know, books. You know, I mean, I've read a couple of them, and some are, you know, just like anything else, some are better than others. But this is one of the ones that kind of resonated with me and the type of genre I like to read. And you know, the art was very good and the coloring is very good. Because sort of like right after I did that interview with Mr. Cimetti, I sort of bought like a first issue bundle, you know, to get. And, you know, some I liked better than others. The Wicked Righteous wasn't in that bundle at that time. But I remember seeing like your thing on your Facebook page and being like, wait, why didn't I get that like in the bundle? You know, like, hold on. And then, you know, once I actually, you know, started reading it, it is one of those things that I was like, oh, this guy kind of knows they know what they're doing. Like, because not only were the covers, you know, really well done, but, you know, the interior is very well done and the story is really good too. So that's why I kind of was like, oh, I got to have this guy on the podcast. So, I mean, I may not have heard of you, or you may not be like Grant Morrison or whatever, but everybody starts somewhere. And it's always good to see like people's, I mean, I know, trust me, I wouldn't want to put my old art up either. I just like, I'm mortified by my current stuff. So I don't even like, you know, it's so, but I get it. Like if you've got a series that is coming out, and then you've got another series that's coming out from T-Pub, and these are two like indie publishers that seem to be making some headway, in the market, I mean, I'm sure people would love to see that.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I've thought about it, and then I've even talked to some of the publishers I work with, and I have never done a Kickstarter. I've kind of just funded my own stuff, and just been lucky enough to be able to work with people, publishers, in a way that I haven't had to do a Kickstarter. Uh-huh. But I'm hearing more and more that it's a great way to kind of like network and get your product name out there as well. Uh-huh. So I was thinking about doing a Kickstarter this year and making that as one of the what is it called, a backer goals or whatever. Sure. Is that you would, you know, have access to the the early stuff.
Did you draw the early stuff, and or did you just write it?
No, there was some that I drew. I'm not a very good artist, but the first couple I drew, and they were very, very basic. And then I even had my oldest draw for me, because he was an artist.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was like, if you draw it, I'll write it, and I told him we'll get, this was when he was in high school. I said, mm-hmm. if you draw it, I'll write it, and then I promise you we'll get it made. So that was kind of one of those things. He drew it, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess we have to get it made now. So,
yeah. Oh, that's great though. That's great the way that he rose to the challenge and was like, oh yeah, Dad, we're gonna make a comic, and you're like, uh oh.
Yeah. and then with the later stuff, I like did the whole DeviantArt thing and some of the other artist social media sites to kind of find and branch out and try to collaborate, which I'm glad I did that, because it kind of taught me the right and the wrong ways to be able to collaborate, because it's not as easy as you would think.
No, absolutely not. So I mean, with the Wicked Righteous, so did you create this book like on your own at first and like go to conventions? Like how did you get hooked up with Alterna? Like how did that all work out? Was it your own sort of thing that you were like pushing out, or like how did you make the connection with Peter over at Alterna?
Yeah, I mean, it's my concept. It's something that I came up with, and yeah. I had the first, you know, I got the first, I want to say it was like first 10 pages maybe done. Uh-huh. With Lucas, who's still the artist, and with Chris, who's still the colorist, and with Brandon, who still does the letters. So the team has been the same team for going on almost 2 years now.
Oh, wow. Well, how did you meet them?
Lucas reached out to me. He had seen some of, strangely enough, I guess, the web stuff that I'd done before, and found it funny, which my early stuff, I guess, did have more of a humor to it. The Wicked Righteous and Disposable Legends aren't, I mean, there might be some light moments in there, but they're not a comedy, I wouldn't say.
No.
but my early web stuff was, and he's very, you know, Lucas is a comedian himself. Okay. So he saw some of the stuff. He's like, I like your writing. I would love to write with you or work with you one day. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to be looking for an artist that week. I was in Texas visiting my parents, and he sent me some stuff, and I liked it. And I was originally going to go for more of a realistic feel, like Postal or Walking Dead, that kind of, you know, like more realistic than Lucas's style, which isn't quite anime, but kind of maybe has an anime influence, I would guess.
Sure.
But I thought that style fit more since it was following children and following adolescents on this journey. It kind of fit more into this world, and it made the violence, to me at least, seem more violent. Uh-huh. You know, it kind of came as more of a surprise when you're seeing violence in that kind of style, I guess.
Sure.
But that's how I found Lucas. And then Chris, I just happened to reach out. I saw his work at Ebon Press. They do like those they do comic books based on – I mean, I know they do more, but they do comic books based on like the 80s B-movies like Maniac or Zombie or some of those other ones.
I don't think I've ever heard of that.
Yeah, no. I mean, he does great colors on those books, and I haven't actually read them. I've just seen shots of them online, and they look great. I mean, the dialogue that I've seen looks great. I haven't seen sequential pages, so I don't know if it flows, but it looks really pretty. Uh-huh. So yeah, that's how I found him as a colorist. And then Brandon was on my Twitter. So, I mean, I use social media as kind of like a minefield to find what I needed. Because I'd been burned so many times on DeviantArt that I got kind of gun shy about reaching out on there.
Oh, really? Really? Like, so you would approach artists on DeviantArt and what, they would like flake out or they wouldn't
Yeah,
come through,
yeah, they
or?
really would. Yeah, because I did have a different artist attached to Wicked Righteous at first, like I said. And nothing against her. She's a great artist, and we still talk every once in a while now. It just, you know, as far as a timeline, I wanted to keep it as professional as possible. If we wanted to show that we were professional, we needed to actually be professional.
Sure.
And the page flow just wasn't happening.
Gotcha.
So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
But with Lucas, when Lucas kind of approached you and was like, hey, I like your stuff, it's kind of funny, and you were like, oh yeah, I've got this apocalyptic end of the world thing with kids. Like, how did you already have that in your head? Or did you meet Lucas kind of online and then you came up with the story that would work well with his style? I mean, it seems like you already had an artist and that had fallen apart, so that might have, I might have answered my question there.
Yeah, no, I already had the story. I had already written, which they say, or at least I've heard, don't overextend yourself as far as how much you're going to write into the future until you know that you have a project.
Yeah.
Like I've heard before, you know, write the first issue and don't write anything more because you don't want to spend months and months on something that may never take off. But I had written 1 through 6 already.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. And I mean, things have changed over the last couple of years, obviously. Like the ending that's happening in 6 is not the ending that I originally had. And it did kind of morph. I mean, the more, because like you were saying, well, let me answer. Yes, I had the story already, and then Lucas was on board with doing it. I think he was just excited to be working with Alterna and working on a book that was going to be released by Diamond, and he was all for it.
Oh, wait. So hold on, because you had – so you already had like a deal with Alterna already, or like – and you were just looking for an artist? Is that how – how did that work?
No, I was just being optimistic.
Oh, okay.
I was telling Lucas that we're going to be pitching it.
You're telling tall tales?
No, not tall tales. I was saying we're going to pitch this and we're going to get it made.
Oh, gotcha.
And he said, like, with Image, and I was like, let's not. I'll definitely submit it to Image.
Shoot
Lucas,
for the moon.
But,
yeah.
You know, and not that Alterna was my last resort, because whenever we pitched it, there were 3 different publishers that came back and were like, yeah, we would like to work with it. And they all sent agreements on like a contract.
Oh,
and
wow.
based on the contract and based on what I've just a gut feeling, I went with Alterna, and I'm glad I did. Nothing against the other publishers, because I would still love to work with them today. I just felt like with this book, I felt like the newsprint gave the story the ambiance that it added to the story, I felt like.
Sure.
And B, it was going to be distributed, and it was going to be the quickest way to get the book out there. So then the behind the scenes stuff, like the split and the IP, that all that kind of stuff, it was a kind of a no brainer on who I wanted to go with. And so as we went with Alterna.
So, as far as like Alterna, I guess for people who don't know, or like I've never really sort of pitched anything to a company, how did you go about pitching? I mean, what's the advice to pitch? Did you track them down at conventions? Were you just following them online? Or did you just submit through the website, like with following their guidelines, submission guidelines? Like, how did you approach companies to pitch the idea without an artist attached? Because isn't it generally a good practice to sort of like have an artist already? Or
yeah, no, that's definitely and that's what I did. I'm sorry if it's not coming across right, but I had the first it's okay. I had the first 10 pages already set. So the first 10 pages were Lucas had already drawn, Chris had already colored, Brandon had already lettered. And those first 10 pages, they changed once we went to production. But these were like the submission packet is what I called it. So this is those 10 pages of what I put into a PDF with like a cover page and a one page synopsis and like a contact information. Nice. and my script. So I sent the script for the first issue, 10 pages that are completed, and then contact information and synopsis. And that's what I sent out to pretty much everybody. I mean, it, depending on what they were asking for. And so, yes, I did go by their submission guidelines, because if you don't, you're just kind of shooting yourself in the foot, because they're like, well, if you can't follow directions on a simple submission page, then how are we going to trust that you're going to follow any other directions? Sure. So I always make sure that I look at that before I pitch anything, because some people want 10 pages. Some are like, don't send any more than 6. Some people are like, I want character bios. I want the full beats for every issue, and it should probably be about a page per issue, but they want it all set up. And then some people are like, no, just give me 6 pages or 10 pages, and that's it. And if I want more, I'll ask. So it you really just behooves yourself if you look online, look at what they're asking for.
So, like, if you had to submit 10 pages for Alterna or whoever, or 6 pages, does that change the way you craft your sort of pitch, like, as far as, like, the story for those 10 pages?
I wouldn't say it changes my story. I do look at the script and see, okay, which 10 pages, and I still do this for every project that I'm going to be pitching, which 10 pages best describes what this story is, or which 10 pages is the best version of a complete story, beginning, middle, end, something they can look at, read, and be satisfied. I'm trying to make sure that it's not a bunch of scenes with just talking heads going back and forth, that there's some action in it, that there's a little diversity as far as the characters and what's being said, and that there's a flow and everything like that. So there's a lot of thought that goes into which pages get made specifically for the pitch. And it's not always the first page 1 through 10 or the last 10 pages. I've done pitches where it's like page 12 through 22 or something like that, uh-huh. You know, and it's just kind of, I felt like those were the best representation of what the book was. You know, it's a guessing game, basically.
gotcha. And so, I mean, that must have felt really good to at least get like 3 companies. I mean, if you were sending them out, whatever, via email or through the mail or however you sent, I mean, some people don't even, you know, it's like crickets. Like, was Alterna one of the first ones to come back, or like the other 2 or however many? And, or were you just like excited to get like your, it's almost like getting like your college application back and being like you're accepted and deciding to which college you're going to go to? Were you like, holy cow, somebody got back to me? Like,
well, you know, I'd gotten rejection letters, and I still have the rejection letters from other projects and from this one, like on my bookcase. Like, I'll keep the rejection letters, kind of put them in random books, and then forget about them. And then with the plan of being able to go back to the bookshelf one day and just be reading and find one, kind of keep me grounded, I guess. I don't, that's the thought behind it, at least. But Alterna was the second company I heard from back on The Wicked Righteous. The first publisher, I was all ready to go with them. I thought, well, I got one back. This is it. But then something inside was like, well, give it like a week.
Wow.
Yeah, just they're not, you know, if they've offered you and they are serious, then they're not going to go anywhere. So I did email the person back and be like, oh, I got your acceptance letter. I do want to look over it and talk to the artistic team, make sure that we're all on board, and I'll get back with you. And in that time frame, I'd gotten 2 more. I'll turn in another publisher.
Oh, wow.
And then so then I felt a little bit more comfortable to kind of sit down and kind of weigh the pros and cons. And, you know, I mean, hopefully it didn't burn any bridges by calling the publishers back and being like, I'm sorry, I'm going to go with someone else at this point. But
I should hope not.
You know. Yeah.
So how did you, because you had said you moved to LA to pursue screenwriting, but how did you get into comics? Had you always liked comics, or were you always interested in comics?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've always been a big comic book fan. I when I was about 15 through 17 ish, I had cancer and I was in the hospital.
Oh, wow.
For a couple years, and you know, you can't really, with cancer, or at least with the chemotherapy I was getting, they recommended I don't go out in the sun, I can't be too active. I had like a what is it called, a shunt in my arms where they would give me the medication, so I couldn't injure that, and I couldn't get injured or else, you know, cause an infection, blah blah blah. So yeah. A lot of my time was just reading and watching TV, and there's only so many times you can watch like the Addams Family or something before you're like, oh my Lord, get me out of here. So my stepmom at the time, she brought me a bunch of comic books, brought me a bunch of like journaling stuff. And that's kind of how it all started, really, was reading like the old school, like Jonah Hex and the DC and the Marvel.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And, you know, Sergeant Rock, that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And then just writing my own things, at the time, you know? Yeah.
And is that like what made you fall in love with writing, or had you been a big reader before that, or just like,
you know, I hadn't been a big, I guess not a big reader. I guess I've considered myself, I'd always wanted to get involved with writing in some way.
Sure.
I saw myself as a teenager, I saw myself more like leaning towards like the movies and the screenplays and, you know, like being like Quentin Tarantino or something that. You know, just like everybody else in the early 90s. They were like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be the next Tarantino. Or the next Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so when I moved to L.A., that was my intention. But I still, you know, I packed my comic books. And when I was writing my screenplays, I sold my comic book collection so I could afford a computer and stuff. And yeah. I wish I hadn't done that, but I did.
Yeah. Well, I'm all about it.
Yeah. But I'd always kept the love. And once my kids started getting older, actually, it was a little bit before that. When The Walking Dead was maybe on issue 12, 13-ish, I'd gone into a comic book store because I was setting up my home office. And I was like, I'm going to decorate my office in like zombie stuff. Just out of the blue, I'd always been a big fan. The first horror movie I'd ever seen was Night of the Living Dead.
Uh-huh.
And it like just stayed with me, the black and white. So I was like, I'm just going to zombie it up in here.
Yeah.
So I was like, I walked in and the clerk's name, it was at Comics and Stuff here in San Diego. And the clerk's name was Kevin. I don't know why I remember that, but his name was Kevin. And I was like, can you recommend any good zombie books right now? And he's like, well, yes, as a matter of fact. And he said, there's this new series from Image called The Walking Dead. So I picked up a couple of those and I framed them and put them on the wall. And at the same time, or a little bit after that, I think is when they were doing the Marvel zombies. So I got some of those, put them up. And then, but I also bought some to read. So I was like, man, these are really good. These are really cool. This is what comic books are now. and then Civil War came out, and I was reading that. And I was like, dude, what have I been missing? So I just kind of backtracked on the stuff I'd been missing and caught up that way. So I guess what was that, 2002-ish, 3-ish?
Gosh,
I'm not sure.
I can't remember when Walking Dead first came out. Yeah, I mean, I've been reading it since the beginning. I've kind of lagged off and like gone into the hardcovers, but that was a book that I was hardcore. I mean, I'm a horror fan too, so mm-hmm. I'm like you. I love zombies. There's some of my favorite things. I mean, the market's a little oversaturated now, but there's definitely some good stuff out there. The Walking Dead was definitely one of those sort of indie, quote unquote, indie books at the time that sort of made me go, oh, wait, we can do different things. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've kind of drifted in and out of indie books throughout my whole comic collecting thing, but I totally get how that could suck you into, you know, into comics back again. And then, you know, the whole downfall towards Civil War and like whatever else, you know.
Yeah. I mean, because growing up, I'd always been a big what if fan, like the Marvel what ifs.
Oh yeah. And
that was like my book. I enjoyed the main stories, but then being able to get the what ifs and be like seeing the characters that you like, you know, die or become a bad guy or whatever, mm-hmm. was like intriguing to me because it got my brain going. Like, dude, I could write this. I could write anything if this is the way comic books are. I could write this.
Yeah.
And at least put that nugget in my head as far as, you know, it's a viable option maybe down the road.
Yeah. And so when you're creating The Wicked Righteous, would you say The Walking Dead was like an influence or like a big inspiration or that sort of, I mean, it kind of blends into sort of, I mean, it is kind of like I wouldn't say like a horror book. I mean, it's definitely more, for me, it leans towards like Mad Max a little bit, but mm-hmm. but it, that must have provided some inspiration to you, right? Like,
you know, maybe subconsciously. I mean, I wasn't thinking about it. If anything, I think that in my head, how I'm seeing the world is more like the Cormac McCarthy book, The Road.
Oh, it
was that was made into a movie not too long. Well, I guess long ago now.
But seriously disturbing.
Yeah. You know, so when I'm when I was building the world, I was building it kind of like on that thing that, you know, just things are bad and people are bad. But there's good people. And I was like, well, what if you took the good adults out of that equation? Mm. You know, I guess, quote unquote, good people. Would the bad people, would there be some that are worse? Would, you know, would they all just be like this feral tribe of people? Yeah. And, you know, and that was kind of the direction I was going. And like I said, things kind of evolved along the way, but that's where I started, was thinking more along the road than the Walking Dead.
And so have you already written the next six issues, or is that something you've got to get to now that it's been approved? Or did you have to pitch those six issues to Alterna and be like, this is my plan? Or were they like, this book is hot, give us six more issues?
I did pitch it. I don't know what they were thinking or what they weren't as far as a continued series. I know early on, Diamond kind of gave the Wicked Righteous a bad break.
Why?
It's always been a six issue limited series, but when they first were soliciting it, they put it down in Previews magazine as a one shot,
and
So comic book shops weren't picking it up as much as they were the other Alterna books, because they were like, well, we don't want to invest in a one shot that, you know. Instead of a six issue limited or four or three issue, whatever. For whatever reason, they weren't as attached to it. So that initially crippled us a little bit as far as sales. And it crippled the first couple books. I want to say first one, two, three were kind of light in sales. But as word got out, I'm guessing, you know, the sales are made up for it, because Alterna does direct sales, and they have their Etsy site or their online shop where they sell books. And so I've seen in the royalties that a lot of the sales that I get are from back orders of issues 1, 2, and 3, and people catching up. You know, and to the comic book store's credit, you know, we started out at Alterna with like maybe 250, 300 shops carrying our book, and now we're pushing closer to 1,000 than 250 shops carrying Alterna books. So, I mean, that's all within a span of about a year.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's really... I'm hoping, and I can't see why it wouldn't continue building, because like you said, I'm not just to toot their horn or anything like that, but I believe in it. You know, it's $1.50 an issue.
Yeah.
It's got the newsprint, which I dig, and if you don't dig, the trades are gonna be in the glossy, you know, format. But I mean, when we're in kind of a rebuilding phase as far as comic shops and just the comic book industry, trying new things doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
And I don't see what's wrong with offering something that's quality, because trust me, the price to make the book is not less.
Yeah. Oh, really? Because I would figure that the newsprint was sort of like a saving grace for like creators who are,
well, as far as as far as print cost
production,
print cost, it does cost less for the newsprint.
Oh, but you're talking about as the
far
talent.
As far as paying the artists, it's the same. I mean, they're not
it's newsprint, so I have to press less hard.
Exactly. So I'm paying them the same thing that I pay any other artist that's working on any of the other books I'm doing. So
sure. Well, let me ask you this about Alterna, because like I remember when I first got that first bundle and of like first issue, because I'd only heard of them on Twitter, and I was like, oh, I'd love to do an interview. And I had not gotten my hands on stuff, and I got the first issue bundle, and it was culture shock. Like, I was like, I guess I've been so, you know, I mean, I was like, oh, wow. Like, this is weird, like holding like a newsprint issue. And I guess I'd forgotten what it was like, because I mean, I think the comic industry in a way has kind of hurt itself with its need for like relevance and to be like important. So they've made the paper stock like heavier and glossier and computer coloring and all that, which obviously that's the way things have gone. But I think in some ways that has hurt the comics industry, because now you're looking at almost $5 for an issue.
Yeah.
But like the thing that struck me with some of the Alterna books that I got was, A, it was newsprint, but the printing, the quality didn't seem as great as, like, I mean, it wasn't just that it was newsprint, because I actually pulled out some of my old Marvel books. Like, I was like, oh, okay, this book looks better than this book. I noticed, like, a variation, which your book does not suffer from that. And then the other thing I was wondering, too, is, like, do you think that that $150 price tag really helps you? Like, do you think, because, I mean, for me, it was like, obviously, for me, I was like, I mean, it might be a stupid question, but for me, I saw like all four issues and I was like, yeah, I'll take them. They were like $1.50 each. But there's this sort of train of thought in the comic industry, too, that it's like, if you offer something cheaply, then people think it's cheap. Like, do you yeah. ever, does that hurt you at all? Or is that a battle that you have to fight? Or can you speak to that? Or
yeah, I mean, I can speak to what I know and have experienced. I don't know if globally what the response would be as far as Peter and the publisher, but sure. but as far as what I know early on, whenever we were starting the newsprint line, that was one of the issues that the comic shops were having, is that, well, like they were saying, well, we put this product on the shelf and people see it and they're thinking it's a less than, and then they're saying that it's newsprint and they're saying, well, they're like, well, okay, yeah, it's a less than, we're not going to even, why give it a shot?
Sure.
And that's what the comic book shops were steering away from. That's the, you know, and maybe there are still some people that see it like that, and I'm sure there would be. I mean, with everybody in the world, I'm sure that some people are going to see the sticker price and be like, well, it can't be as good, you know, I have to pay premium to get premium, and that's not always true. More and more I'm seeing shops, and more I'm seeing people that will come, and they'll dig the $1.50 price, or the $1.99, whatever it is that the book is, and they're like, well, I can buy two or three of these at the same price I would buy one. And like you said, it's easier to get latched on to or try something new that you don't feel like you're going to be cheated for trying, you know? Yeah. And that trickles down to me too. I mean, I don't buy nearly as many single issues as I used to because the price tag, you know, just keeps rising.
Oh yeah.
So I'll wait till the trade comes out and spend 10, 15 bucks on the trade and be happy. You know, and maybe that's part of what's wrong with the industry. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I just know that $5 an issue is something that's rough for a lot of people to commit to.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So with mine, like I have five out now. Five total Wicked Righteous books out right now, and I was just at a free comic book day signing in LA at Heidi Ho and Comic Bug.
Yeah,
and
I met my friend Dave there, Baby Badass.
Oh, yeah. I did
put that book together a little bit. So
did you?
Yeah.
I actually have that book upstairs. I haven't unpacked all the way, obviously.
I hope you enjoy it because it's crazy.
Yeah, I want to think I got a picture with him too.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. Small world.
Small world. Yeah.
Yeah, and at those two events, I mean, I sold hundreds of books. Because people would come up, see the $1.50, and be like, "Okay, I'll take all five," because you can spend $7.50 and get five books, whereas you couldn't buy two books at $5 a piece. You know, yeah. I mean, you'd be spending more.
You would be blown away, because when I first put up that Peter Cimetti interview, like some of the comic guys I know that are just friends with me on Facebook, or mm-hmm. I'm friendly with, or who I've written, you know, reviews with when I used to be on Ain't It Cool a long time ago. Like they were so resistant to it. They're like, oh, this is never going to work. How could you ever, you know, like, why would you, you know, people are not going to accept it. And I'm like, why? Like, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you at least try something? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because for me, it's like those price tags have pushed me out. And then you've got comic retailers who are on their own or trying to offer like 30%, 20% discounts. You know what I mean? And it's just, mm-hmm. it's kind of culling the industry a bit. You know, I'm surprised that Marvel or DC haven't looked at something like Alternate and been like, why aren't we doing that? Like, what are we, you know, it just blows my mind.
Yeah. I mean, if Alterna keeps going the way they're going, I completely anticipate Marvel and or DC to unleash like a Marvel retro, you know, something like that, where they do Marvel, but it's newsprint and it's a lesser cost, but they're new stories, you know, something like that. Because if Alterna keeps going and they are as successful multiplied times a couple years, then people won't be able to ignore that, you know.
Yeah. It's something that, you know, I've got to get in touch with Peter with at some point, because the one thing that I thought would be interesting for Alterna to do is, I know, well, first of all, I love how he's kind of like standing up to Diamond a little bit, which, you know, I don't know, you know, where they're, you guys are selling stuff, or he's selling stuff through the Etsy store, which is where I was going to pick up the next couple issues of Wicked Righteous, which, mm-hmm. you know, everyone should get it there if they can. Is it alternapress.com or I would imagine, just look up Alterna Press or Alterna Comics, and you can buy all your issues there, right? You can buy all the Wicked Righteous stuff there.
Yeah, at Alterna Comics Etsy shop, I think is what it is.
Gotcha. Yeah,
they have all of the so like if something is released this Wednesday, then it'll be available in the Etsy shop the following Monday.
Gotcha.
So we give that grace period, that almost week grace period of being in the shops and whatnot, and then it'll be available on Etsy.
Yeah. Well, either way, what I love is the fact that option is available, because it's not available for like any other comic company that I'm aware of. Maybe Dark Horse does that. And, mm-hmm. you know, people offer stuff digitally. But the one thing that I was wondering is if there were any plans to offer like sort of a subscription service, like, hey, can I order something in advance, like old school, like subscription, like mailing, like if they have an ongoing series, you know, that to me sounds like it would be a genius idea, because then it would be like, oh, the Wicked Righteous is coming out. I'll buy all six issues, you know, without even knowing or, you know, what's coming. Like, say I wanted to commit to like the next six issues of Wicked Righteous, just pre-order them and have them mailed to me. You know, I don't know how that would work cost-wise, but to me, like, that would be like the next sort of like retro step, like do like you did like in the old days, which is, you know, you could subscribe to comics. You could just like have them come in your mailbox and you would run out and be like, I got my latest issue of Superman, you know, or something like that, you know?
Yeah. I may be wrong, but I think that's already happening. I want to say that I've seen people on Twitter talking about how that they do have a subscription and, or they'll post the picture of the newest book that they've gotten from me and say that it came from my subscription to the Alterna site.
Oh, wow.
So I may be wrong. I may be reading it out of context, but I'm pretty sure that's a practice that's happening right now.
Oh, that's great. That's a great idea. Well, I mean, beyond the newsprint, beyond the $150 price tag, I love the whole, you know, standing up to Diamond and like, because as far as I'm concerned, like Diamond has hurt the industry a lot. And I've been waiting for a publisher or a big publisher to actually say like, look, I'm surprised Disney hasn't done it with Marvel yet, but like, you know, to just be like, look, guys, this isn't working. Like, we have to figure something else out. So that's great. But let me ask you before I let you go, because we're almost at an hour and I appreciate all your time, you taking the time out of your evening to discuss your books with me.
Of course.
Tell me about Disposable Heroes, if you can, like really quickly. That comes out, you said, in August?
Yeah, it's called Disposable Legends.
Oh, Legends. And it's, okay.
Yeah, that's okay. It's actually Disposable Heroes. We flip flopped a bunch of different names, and Disposable Heroes was one of them that we disposed of, I guess. we went with Disposable Legends, good or bad. We went with it. Disposable Legends is basically a near future sci-fi story where cloning is human cloning is legal, so you could get Muhammad Ali versus Bruce Lee and you put them on TV to fight to the death. So that kind of setting, that kind of world. But then of course some things go awry. But some of the early reviews have called it like a Westworld meets Hunger Games, something cool. like that. So it's I'm excited about it. Talked a lot about it this weekend because I was giving out free posters for both projects, for Wicked Righteous and Disposable Legends, and everybody that I handed a poster to was excited for the concept. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, great. And that comes out through TeePub, and that'll be in shops, correct? Like American shops.
Yeah, it'll be in American shops. It's Diamond distributed as well, again, good or bad. And it'll be in shops all over the world if the shop wants to order it. And it's a monthly series, starts in August. And
do
then,
you have an order code on you? Or
not yet. The order code comes out in June.
Oh, gotcha. Well, yeah. That's awesome. Well, congratulations on all your success, your comic-making success, and all your children-making success, too. Dear Lord, I don't even know how you do it. That's incredible. Your wife must be an amazing woman.
She is an amazing woman.
Well, that's great. Well, congratulations, and thank you very much for joining me on the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. My name is Christian Horn, and I have been on the line with Terry Mayo, creator of The Wicked Righteous from Alterna Comics, and also Disposable Legends from, do we call them just TeePub or TeePublishing? What are they called now? It's TeePub, right?
TeePub Comics.
TeePub Comics. Okay, I apologize. Anyway, thank you for listening to this episode. You can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. You can email us at ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And thank you for listening to this episode. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-time fanboy.